Don't say okay, so.
I'm not going to say okay, so.
Hi, this is Eli.
And this is Blair.
You're listening to episode 2 of the Pathetic Podcast.
Yep. We thought we should give it a really cool name, like episode 2, Electric Boogaloo, or episode 2, Pig in the City.
Pig in the City is the best sequel of all time, actually.
I did want to talk about sequels, but I wasn't sure if we had that much to say. Like, I don't know,
sequels. I've got a lot to say about Babe 2, Pig in the City.
I never saw it.
I don't have any comments prepared, but Babe 2, Pig in the City is, people always make fun of it. But it actually got, like, better reviews than the first
game. I remember seeing that on, like, the VHS
case. I think Gene Siskel made it, like, his number one movie of the year. I remember Scholastic Book Fairs.
Absolutely.
At your school.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I bought the novelization of Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Wait, whose viewpoint was it from? The pig? Babe?
It might have been the Pig in the City's view.
Wow.
But I think it was, just, like, third person.
That's the kind, you know, of...
Third-person omniscient. I don't know. It might have been using some free and direct discourse. Like, it sort of changes. Like, now you're seeing from the view of the pig. Sort of, but, like, does it in a very gentle way.
That's so meta.
Yeah.
That's the kind of ghostwriting gig I would love to get, novelizing sequels.
Well, sometimes the novelizations come out before the movie, so it's, like, legit. Because, like, I probably could have spoiled Babe 2, Pig in the City to anyone who didn't.
That's tragic.
Cause you got me, baby, I got you, babe. I got you, babe. I got you, babe. They say our love won't pay the rent.
So last podcast we ended with an amazing song. I don't know if you listened. If you're a new listener, welcome.
Hi.
First time, long time listener, first time call.
You should catch up. The last song we played on our first episode was Tiptoe Through the Tulips by Tiny Tim.
The classic Tiny Tim cover of Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Yep.
And I don't know, this got me on a big Tiny Tim kick.
Oh, it was ridiculous. Trying to edit together this last episode, it was like, can we put a Tiny Tim song in every... No, we cannot.
Yeah, Blair can tell you about my Tiny Tim obsession the last few days, but it was very coincidental, or shall we say serendipitous.
Because it was Tiny Tim's birthday.
It was Tiny Tim's birthday, the day we added Tiny Tim to the last podcast.
So it was perfect. Maybe,
it was really cool.
For people who don't know, we should explain who Tiny Tim is.
We should explain Tiny Tim, I guess, so.
It's a hard thing to explain.
It's a hard thing to explain, and I was at a party this summer where for some reason I brought up Tiny Tim.
Sounds like something you would do.
And then I was getting very angry and belligerent with people for not knowing who Tiny Tim is. And I
would
be like...
That also sounds like something you would do.
I was like, you don't know the American icon Tiny Tim? He's a classic.
Yeah, but...
He's an icon of America.
But some people don't. So who is
he? Some people don't. So I won't judge you. Tiny Tim, so... Late 60s is when Tiny Tim was discovered, playing on his ukulele. I think he played in, like, Harvard Square or something.
Yeah.
And he sang in an amazing falsetto on his ukulele.
Yep.
And he'd cover pop songs. Americana type stuff.
Yeah.
From all periods of America. Like anything from...
Classics.
Pop songs from the 1700s, 1800s to now.
He does a really good I Got You Babe where he sings both Sonny and Cher's part.
Yeah, it's great. So like he just likes pop songs in general.
Yeah.
Someone discovered him. They're like, this is crazy. This guy can play everything on ukulele.
He's basically like a weirdo
and
singer.
And he sings an amazing falsetto voice. I mean, if you don't know him, look up some videos on YouTube after this.
Yeah, definitely.
So he sort of got his first TV appearance, I think, was on Laugh-In.
Yeah.
Where he performed Tiptoe Through the Tulips, and just his mannerisms and everything were just a huge hit with people.
Weirdly enough.
Like, people went crazy for him singing Tiptoe Through the Tulips in falsetto.
Which
and
is
making weird little mannerisms, and he's got, like, a big nose and, like, curly black hair.
Yeah, he really...
He's a weird-looking guy, but, like, just... And his mannerisms are sort of effeminate, but just, like... Weird and great.
If you've seen the first episode of
SpongeBob SquarePants,
this you will. What is the song called?
Living in the Sunlight, Loving
Living
in
the
Moonlight.
Sunlight, Loving in the Moonlight. It's do 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 do. Yeah, you'll recognize it.
Living
it's
in the Sunlight, Loving in the Moonlight.
Yep.
Having a wonderful time.
It's very.
It's hard to do a Tiny Tim impression.
It is.
You can't.
Which we'll get to. But it works well with the aesthetic of SpongeBob SquarePants because it's kind of goofy and campy.
Wonderful.
And really Eli realized that movies about musicians are Oscar bait.
They're Oscar bait. And I think the first time this was really brought up was, so you had that year or two where you had Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash. You had Jamie Foxx win for Ray.
Yeah.
I mean, then for Walk the Line, you had a Reese Witherspoon win for June Carter Cash.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but then Walk Hard with John C. Reilly came out, which is already parodying the genre of, like...
But we're not interested in parodying it.
I was like, there is a huge market for a Tiny Tim biopic.
There is. There could be.
And I'm thinking of writing it. If I can find enough biographical stuff, I could totally write that and pitch it.
Because it's got all the elements for, like, an Oscar-winning role for whoever takes this on.
First off, that's the kind of performance someone will call transformative. Like, I did not know Sean Penn, for example.
We think that Sean Penn should do it.
There's a lot of people that, like, it might even be an unknown, but it would just be one of those roles where everyone's like, did you see so-and-so as Tiny Tim? It wasn't Tiny Tim.
It should be like Charlize Theron.
Like, you know how people talked about Jamie Foxx and Ray? They're like, he was just like Ray Charles. Like, it would be that kind of thing.
I never saw Ray.
But then, hopefully, if it was an actor that could do the falsetto even, it would be even crazier.
That's the prerequisite for the role. That's your audition.
And then it's got the classic structure of, like, a rise to fame that was sort of accidental, like, you know, on Laugh-In. His wedding was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Happenstance, and then...
Then the fall, where he gets fat and is sort of touring and playing in, like,
and
small venues.
Crazy and weird, and then...
And it's just, like, a total novelty act.
And is he dead?
Well, he died in 1996 of, like, a heart attack,
okay.
I think.
Okay, so that...
So it was sort of a tragic end, actually.
Yeah, we don't really know where the movie would end.
It's like a tragic end where it ends, so it would work.
It's got so much potential. I mean, Eli was really the one thinking about it.
I was going fucking crazy. I think Blair was like, Eli, stop talking.
In my mind, I could
Blair
see...
Blair really is... She's giving me credit right now. When I was bringing it up, she's like, stop talking about Tiny Tim.
But you know what? Now that we're articulating all the different parts of it, it does seem to work really well. I just envision the poster as, like, a man in silhouette with, like, long curly hair.
A huge audience.
The Tiny Tim story.
Well, I had some title names.
There's a lot of good title names.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips is a great one.
Well, wait. So,
Living in the Sunlight.
I'm trying to finish describing the visual appeal of the movie poster.
Go ahead.
It's just a man in silhouette with crazy long curly hair, kind of like Weird Al, but like holding a ukulele in one hand, sort of like the spotlight's washing over him and giving him form in silhouette. And then it says one of these great taglines like,
I've got them. All right, so...
Yeah.
If you know Tiptoe Through the Tulips, this line's funny, but like it would be like, this fall, this winter, things that bother you, they don't bother him.
From Sean Penn is Tiny Tim.
Or, like, having a wonderful time this winter.
It's, like, it works really well.
Also, the story just... There's so much pathos. It's just, if you watch an interview with Tiny Tim, he's just such... an interesting figure, and he has this kindness and genuineness to him that's just brilliant while just being a novelty act. It's almost heartbreaking.
It's pathos, but it's pithos.
Pithos.
You know what I mean?
We should have called our podcast Pithos.
That would have been way too...
That would have been dumb.
Esoteric. But it really does, there's so much potential to this story. And I think the first step is we just need to educate the public again about who Tiny Tim is.
Yeah, because I've been doing my job. I've been going to parties and being belligerent,
telling
people to get knowledgeable about who Tiny Tim is.
Yeah, so it's on you, America. I mean, create a demand for this movie.
There are so many great videos on YouTube.
Yeah, just look them up.
Look up some of the original appearances on Laugh-In where he pulls his ukulele out of a bag and he's acting very frail with the ukulele.
It's weird, but you want to see someone get into this act. I mean, Sean Penn, I don't know why we thought of Sean Penn, because he kind of looks like him.
He could look like him. The thing is, he's such a unique looking dude that that's going to be tough.
Or Joaquin Phoenix, because we already know
he's
crazy.
It's one of those things where someone uglies themselves up for the role and everyone's like, I couldn't believe it, because everyone knows that that works. Like,
that's why I thought Charlize Theron.
Like when Nicole Kidman was Virginia Woolf and everyone's like, she was so...
Or when Charlize Theron was Eileen Wuornos.
This actually brings me to a subject that we weren't going to talk about, but that has angered me since...
What, that ugly
high school
up roles get... Oscars?
But not just that, but that they get taken by beautiful people.
Yeah.
There are ugly people who want to be actors.
Yep.
The girl who played Ugly Betty, she wasn't ugly.
No, she was gorgeous.
She was gorgeous. Like, give it to an ugly person.
Yeah.
They're struggling for roles, well, and their role is called Ugly Betty. Don't give it to some chick
But Ugly Betty, the joke is that she's not really ugly. It's to show how shallow all the fashion people are.
But she did, they did uglier her up a lot for the show.
Well, ugly, I mean...
Then, but like, I don't get that's so brave. Nicole Kidman as Virginia Woolf, that was brave. Well, like, it wasn't brave.
Wait,
beautiful.
Eli, you gotta stop deriding this kind of criticism, because this is what's gonna sell your Tiny Tim movie when someone stars in
it. Oh, it will, but I know that's why, so...
So it's a double-edged sword, really.
And then,
This is show business.
Yeah, Charlize Theron as Eileen Wuornos, it was like... I didn't know she could go that ugly. And it's
I think Charlize Theron should be Tiny Tim. I mean, if Cate Blanchett can be Bob Dylan.
Then it's like, people are like, oh, Charlize Theron, I didn't know she could, like,
it was transformative.
It's makeup.
But like, she wouldn't even have to work to do the falsetto, is the best part.
Yeah.
I bet she even plays the ukulele. I don't know.
I'm thinking of casting Charlize.
We're going to work on this script.
But like, all right.
First off,
I'm just saying, ugly people sometimes really want to be actors. Not even ugly, but average-looking people.
Eli, I hate to break it to you. I think you're just, you know, raging against the machine. Like, no one's... Pretty people are going to continue to be the ones that are portraying stuff.
But, like, when you have a role that specifically says ugly in it...
All right.
Why not hire an ugly person?
Why don't you just, you know, bracket off Ugly Betty. Don't worry about it.
You know what I think? My theory is that casting directors don't want to insult people by being like... Looking for ugly people. Then when they get hired, it's like, yeah, you were pretty fucking ugly.
It's kind of like it's kind of like the DCOM motocrossed, where they have this
Disney
girl.
Disney Channel original comedy for those listeners who
or
don't
Disney
know.
Channel original movie for those
Disney Channel
who
original
can spell.
Movie, sorry, DCOC.
Yeah, really.
Sorry, for some reason, I thought the acronym was. All right,
it doesn't matter. The movie is about a girl who wants to be a motocross racer, and she enters into the motocross world as her brother and cuts off all her hair. And kind of looks like a guy. But I always wondered, did they hire this actress and say...
You can look like a dude?
Yeah, like, you're pretty manly looking. She wasn't, really. Like, no one was fooled.
Yeah, no one was fooled except that guy.
Except the guy who had a crush on her.
Had and a crush on her as a dude, but then really had a crush on her when she found out
he was
a girl.
Like, weird...
These feelings finally make sense!
Yeah.
I thought I might have been gay, but I wasn't. It was just that this chick that was acting like a dude...
That movie was so heteronormative. And you know what? The Tiny Tim biopic would challenge gender preconceptions.
There's rumors that Tiny Tim was secretly gay, but because of his, like, hardline Christianity, he couldn't...
He was also a Christian.
That he was, like, tortured inside.
Wow. There's so much inner conflict.
There's so much pathos.
He has a rich inner life that we just want to bring to the screen.
You've got three acts, too. You've got, you know, you've got the rise, the fall, and you've got, like, sort of the comeback.
The denouement comeback section. You
know? But then when he came back, he was so fat he had a heart attack eventually. He was still 60-something. He wasn't that young.
We might deal with that.
We lost a great talent with Tiny Tim, though, 1996.
Oh, absolutely. It was a hard year. I was six, I remember.
But, I mean... Some of his songs, he's a novelty act, but, you know, you listen to, like, his cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow or something.
It's
and
beautiful.
There's some heartbreak there.
So this movie would show all of that.
I mean, here are the awards I think it could feasibly win.
Okay.
It would be nominated for Best Picture.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Best Director.
Yep.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Best Actor, locked for a win.
Yeah, Charlize Theron.
Locked for a win.
Transformative.
Charlize, Sean Penn, I don't care who does it, it's going to be transformative.
Maybe both. I think it should be like I'm Not There. Or not I'm Not There. What was the one with...
I'm Not There.
Was it I'm Not There?
Yes.
That was the Joaquin Phoenix one. I'm thinking of the Bob Dylan one.
The Bob Dylan movie, was that also called I'm Not There?
Were they both called I'm Not There? We're confused. No Direction Home? No, that was a
No Direction Home was a documentary about Bob Dylan.
Damn it.
I'm Not There was the Dylan movie, and then... The
Joaquin Phoenix one was called... We have the internet, but we're just...
We have the internet, but looking it up would take time and it would sound awkward because you'd know we were looking it up. Blair, you're not using the computer right now.
Oh, was that you were stalling? It doesn't matter.
I was trying to stall.
The idea is that we would have multiple actors portraying Tiny Tim.
Yeah, that would be cool too. But probably not, because then it couldn't win for Best Actor.
Well, that's true.
We would get Best Supporting Actor like Charlize was nominated for the Dylan movie.
That wasn't Charlize, that was Cate Blanchett.
Charlize
is our ideal get for this role. We're shooting.
She's not
for
my
her.
Ideal get. I think it's gonna be some actor that we don't. I think James Franco could do it.
He is really into weird shit.
Big him up a little bit. He's got sort of the look. He could possibly do it.
I mean, he did cut his own arm off. Or fan favorite Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway is not playing Tiny Tim for
I
me.
Think there's
She's pretty pale.
Bender.
Tiny Tim's pretty pale.
Yeah, have you seen that one album cover? He's, like, creepily pale.
Yeah, he looks like a vampire.
Or, well, I don't know. It's a tough casting call, because you really need someone who
can... It's going to win Best Actor. Let's just say it's going to win Best Actor.
Best Actor, Best
Picture. Supporting Actor, Actress, no, none of that.
Not Best Original Song.
I think it's going to get, but...
What about, like, one of those weird,
Editing? There's only a best... It could get sound editing. Should get one of those, or sound mixing.
Mm-hmm.
For the uke. It can't get original song because it's all adapted. Right. It's not going to get score.
Well, maybe
adapted screenplay if it was off a biography or something.
All right, so write the biography first. Or you could have someone like Sting write an original ballad for it. Sting always seems to have... Exactly. His ballads are always nominated for Oscars and they always suck.
The irony, of course, being that he was quite a large man, actually. He had a large stature.
Was his name actually Tim? His Christian name?
No, his name was Herbert.
That's really unfortunate.
Actually, great story is that we were actually at the cemetery where Tiny Tim's buried last year. We didn't get time to visit.
Where is he buried?
Pay respect at Lakewood Cemetery in Minneapolis.
Oh, that's right. We did visit. I, at the time, I guess, was not really aware of who Tiny Tim was. Also, we were really busy.
We were on a road trip for a scavenger hunt.
It's a very long story that we'll probably...
We mostly just had to visit the portion of the graveyard that was reserved for circus performers and an elephant.
So we really want to make this movie.
I'm going to pitch it when I move out to Los Angeles.
It's
going to
be
it.
The thing that puts Eli's name on the map, really.
You're going to be like, oh, he won for Best Adapted Screenplay off somebody. There's no biography of Tiny Tim.
I'll write the biography. I can do that.
You write the bio. I write the screenplay off of it. I feel like if you pitch this to a producer, they'll start seeing Oscar gold.
Oscar gold,
eyes.
Dollar signs, the whole thing. It's
like
that,
like in a cartoon where you see the dollar signs on their eyes. Like,
exactly. Mm-hmm. That's how producers in Hollywood actually work. Their eyes reveal their emotions.
I'm going to win some awards. So, like, if you're listening now...
You heard it here.
10 years from now, you might be like, I remember hearing some jerk on some stupid fucking podcast about pop culture and the Bible talking about
Tiny Tim
and how he's going to make a movie. Well, he's going to write it.
He is.
And then I win Best Adapted Screenplay, and you're like, I was there at the beginning.
You should just start making your Oscar ballot now for your office Oscar pool for, like, a couple years
down
the road.
Like, 2020, let's say.
We're just giving you fair notice that
it's
going to be
the best. I'm going to say 2020 is when I win Best Adapted Screenplay.
We're
going to
sweep it.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips. The Tiny Tim Story.
It's going to be beautiful.
Or it could just be called Tiny. We'll see.
We'll see. Keep your eyes out.
Things that bother you never bother me. Things that bother you never bother me. I feel happy and fine. Ha ha! Living in the sunlight, loving in the moonlight, having a wonderful time. Having got a lot, I don't need a lot. Coffee's only a dime. Living in the sunlight, loving in the moonlight, having a wonderful time.
Friday Night Lights. It's a great show. It's really entertaining. It's got heart. It's got really good writing. It's got fantastic acting. I just think it's probably one of the greatest TV shows I've ever seen. And I don't even like football.
Wait, Blair, that's what we're going to talk about.
It is what we're going to talk about. So Friday Night Lights, it would seem, is the TV show that makes it okay for hipsters to like sports. Basically.
What do I have to say to that? Basically, fuck you, first of all.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fuck you, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Because, alright, I've heard so many people say this about not only Friday Night Lights, but about any movie they like involving sports.
Like Moneyball.
They have to make this statement like, I don't even like insert sport here, but I loved this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, wait, I just want to pause quickly before you start ranting. This is what my dad will tell you when I got him started watching it. He will say, Friday Night Lights, it's not about football. It's about
human drama.
And I say, Dad, that's what fiction is. Like, books, movies, TV shows. Human drama. Except, like, Watership Down or something. I don't know. But
it's about rabbit drama. But you know what? It was really about human drama.
You know what? I don't even like bunnies going on trips, but I loved Watership Down. It's like, it's not my thing. It's a little out there.
I don't usually like stories about bunnies. Peter Cottontail?
Not really.
Fuck
my
that
thing.
Guy.
Exactly. But Watership Down, man. You just gotta try it.
So, like, we get it. You're too cool to like sports because it's not a mental activity.
Or you're like me and you're just a moron who's never followed sports.
Whatever.
Because you don't
that's,
know how scoring
that's,
works.
If you don't like sports, that's fine. But, like, you don't always have to preface, you know what? It's really weird that I like Friday Night Lights because I don't even like. And then the people that are like, This show is so much better than the sport it portrays. First off, if you care about the characters in the show, aren't you insulting them by being like,
yeah,
the thing these characters really care about is fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's only valuable insofar as it gives us an insight into what it means to be human.
Like, some people really care about football. It doesn't matter if you do. Like, these characters do. So,
yeah,
you're actually insulting the show when you say something like that.
A little bit.
Because you're going, these characters care about something meaningless, but I still like it.
And can I say, all right, if you're watching Friday Night Lights or you intend to watch Friday Night Lights, skip a couple minutes ahead because I'm about to do a spoiler for beginning of season four. So the basic premise of the show is it's about a high school football coach who coaches a team in Texas in a small town where football is basically God. God is also God because it's Texas, but football, football is their second God. They're really into it. But then in the fourth season, he, because of various school political moves, gets transferred to a high school where there is no football program and no one cares about it, that's in the east part of the town. So it was a master stroke for this show, because I maintain that, like, after the third season, TV shows need to do something.
Shake things up a little bit.
They need to shake things up, because otherwise you're just getting dull and doing the same thing over and over again. And a lot of shows fall flat in the fourth season. But what they did was basically invert the premise of the show and make the characters articulate by their actions in this new show, in this new town where they're building the program from the ground up, why football is so important in the first place. And I thought it was brilliant. So, I don't know. I think that's basically, I don't even know. I just, it was so good. And I mean, I don't care about football, but I cared in that moment.
Yeah. Because, I mean, basically what we're seeing is, like, nothing is, any story that's only about what's on the surface is usually not a good story.
Well, right.
Like,
if you
it's
just
about many other things. And, like, you can't say, like, I don't know, let's name another book. Name another book.
Not the Bible. That's not appropriate for this discussion. Well, Watership Down's a good example.
Yeah. Like we said, like it's saying, I don't even like football, but I like Friday Night Lights, is essentially as weird as saying, like, I don't like bunnies, but
yeah, like, you don't need to justify it, just because, like, I think sports are just more polarizing than any other kind of...
Some people like to define themselves as intellectuals by not liking sports.
And some people like to define themselves as sports fans, period. Like, that's their identity.
Yeah.
And it's, like, never the two shall meet, mm-hmm. necessarily.
Like, it's, like, I don't know, like, a book, like, a historical book, like, written, like... Like, I don't know, it'd be, like, saying about The Hunger Games. Like,
I don't even like
the concept of kids killing each other in an arena, but,
yeah, but
I like The Hunger Games.
There,
like,
was good human drama.
Like, things are not about what they're about. The plots are there for characters to interact.
Yeah.
For, I mean, well, the plots are there also to be interesting. But, like, it's not always the setting that makes them interesting. Like, things have to be interesting in their own right.
Right.
It's not like Friday Night Lights is a football game.
No.
Like,
because then you would just watch a football
game. The correct thing to say would be, I don't even like football, but I enjoyed that football game I just watched.
Right.
Would be like, would
that
make
would,
sense to say.
That would make sense.
That makes sense, because you're going, I don't really like the sport, but that game was pretty irritating.
Yeah, it's like if you watch a football game and you don't usually like football, there must be something egregious in a good way about the game you just watched to recommend
yeah.
it. But a TV show is not about the game if it's about football.
Yeah. And we only bring this up because we've seen so many people saying this.
Because it's pretty much, like, verbatim what people will say when
yeah.
they talk about liking
every
the show.
Like, and Friday Night Lights has gotten so friggin' popular since it's been added to Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
That, like, so many more people are saying this than ever said this. And
right.
they, like, have to, like, it's like, dude, you don't have to say that you don't like football.
It can just be a good show.
Don't say that it's better than football, because
that's
the definition of apples to oranges.
It really is,
like,
because the kind of entertainment you're getting out of a sports match is not the same
it's
kind.
It's a different thing entirely.
There's different things at stake.
It's not a character thing.
I mean,
it's watching
yeah.
athletic skill and stuff.
It is.
It's much more visual in a lot of ways. It's
exactly.
seeing something exciting.
I would say it's
that.
Even more visceral, you know.
It's
There's
a more,
like,
visceral experience in many ways, yeah.
It's ritualized battle.
I mean, and I like football. I like
football
a lot. I like sports a lot.
I don't really like sports, but I will watch them for the sort of Durkheimian experience of coming together under a totem, because it lets me connect to the people. It's true. I mean, that's why I didn't watch when the Phillies were winning the World Series.
I will never forgive you.
But
I will be
since
friends,
then,
but...
fans since 2009, I do occasionally watch baseball games.
She does, she tries.
I watched last weekend when the Pirates beat us.
Yeah.
Which sucked. Fuck you, Pittsburgh.
Boom. That takes a lot for you to say.
I never liked Pittsburgh. I talk constantly about how much I hate Pittsburgh. And if I were to say something like, I don't even like Pittsburgh, but the last time I was there, I wouldn't ever actually say that.
That would make more sense, though.
What would I say? What would I like about Pittsburgh? I don't even like Pittsburgh, but when people were really... Well, I don't really...
I like Pittsburgh.
When were you there?
I've been there to see the Phillies play the Pirates in Pittsburgh.
I guess that's the only reason
I enjoyed it there.
I'm trying to think about like a tourist attraction that's nearby. I stopped there once.
The Andy Warhol Museum, Falling Waters, which is outside of Pittsburgh.
That's actually closer to Ligonier.
Okay, well, I mean, it's the Pittsburgh area.
No, it's the Laurel Highlands. Little known fact about me, I once actually wrote a bunch about the tourist attractions in the southwestern part of Pennsylvania, so...
That's worth another podcast entirely. It's road really stops not. In Pennsylvania.
There aren't many. And most of them are battlefields.
It's no Wisconsin.
It's not. That's really worth another podcast.
That is worth another
podcast. The giant fiberglass beings of the Midwest.
It's pretty amazing. But Friday Night Lights.
I guess, yeah, we should wrap this up with some kind of meaningful message. I won't say point.
I mean, basically what I'm saying is...
You can like Friday Night Lights.
You don't feel bad about liking something about football.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a story. You're watching it for character interaction. You're watching it for emotion.
Yep.
You're not watching it to see who wins the football game. Like, it's not like an entire episode is just a football game with no talking.
There's lots of talking.
And I would argue that if you need to say this is better than football... then you probably don't like the show, actually.
Then you're probably a douche.
Because if you're insulting the characters...
Yep.
Then
you don't respect it.
Yeah.
I think also the takeaway is that we here at Pathetic, the two of us, believe that you should like what you like, even if it's shitty, because that's okay.
You know?
There's no shame.
You can know it's shitty.
You don't need to justify it.
I know The Celebrity Apprentice is shitty. Not gonna stop me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Friday Night Lights is actually highly excellent, but...
I mean, but, like, that actually is a highly touted, critically acclaimed program.
That's true. I do like things that are conventionally shitty, like Monster Quest is pretty good, Toddlers and Tiaras. We don't need to get into this. If you look at my Netflix viewing history, it's actually pretty shameful, but I'm trying to free myself of that shame and not justify things to people, especially as a non-sports fan. So go forth and watch your shows. And tell us about them. My old man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes to slow. Got that Friday on my mind. Gonna have fun in the city. We meet my girl, she's so pretty. She looks fat tonight. She is ever sad to me. Now, presented without commentary, because it doesn't need any, is every single instance of Michelle Branch singing Ho Woe in her hit singles from her two first CDs. You're welcome. So, something that's been in the news in the last 3 days is J.K. Rowling's new book, which is called The Casual Vacancy, and it's for adults.
But not meaning like a porn book.
Not in a porn book.
It's not one of those nudie books.
Which, like, would be awesome, but I understand that she wants to devote her talents elsewhere. So, I'm going to read this press release from Little Brown.
And I have yet to hear the description,
this is new for Eli. It might be new for you guys. So, The Casual Vacancy. When Barry Fairweather dies unexpectedly in his early 40s, the little town of Pagford is left in shock. Pagford is, seemingly, an English... idyll?
Ideal.
Ideal?
Idyll. Wait, I've never known how to say that. I-D-Y-L-L.
That word. I think it just means a town.
I've never known how to say it. We sound so uneducated.
Yeah, true confessions. We're stupid. All right, anyway.
Idyll.
With a cobbled market square and an ancient abbey, but what lies beneath the pretty facade is a town at war. Rich at war with poor, teenagers at war with their parents, wives at war with their husbands, teachers at war with their pupils, Pagford is not what it seems. and the empty seat left by Barry on the parish council soon becomes the catalyst for the biggest war the town has yet seen. Who will triumph in an election fraught with passion, duplicity, and unexpected revelations? Blackly comic, thought-provoking, and constantly surprising, The Casual Vacancy is J.K. Rowling's first novel for adults.
All right, so I've got some thoughts.
Go ahead.
From the press release. One, I hate to be the person that says, like, hasn't this done before? But, like, that whole, like, it looks like a normal everyday town on the exterior, but underneath there's something darker and, like...
You know what I thought of was...
There's contention brewing.
Hot Fuzz, which it's not really like, other than it's British and it's about a small...
I thought of, like, Stepford Wives or something like that.
Yeah.
But, like, this sounds like it's focusing more on that, like, election, like contention
stuff. I think we're all pretty aware now that small towns always have fucked up shit going on.
Yeah, like, but, I mean, it's a great go-to motif. It, like, Twin Peaks and stuff, there's some great stuff, but, like...
It's tropey.
But I'm just gonna say, first off, like, that is a trope, the small town that seems normal, but...
Although, to be fair...
darker beneath the surface.
Harry Potter is kind of in the
tradition... But I was just gonna say, but so is Harry Potter. It's just, like, you know...
The tradition of classic...
Classic good versus evil heroes
novels tale. And that too.
So like, I don't know, and I am a huge defender of Harry Potter's literary merit.
Yep. Wizarding World of Harry Potter, a great theme park.
I mean, I think Harry Potter is just like my generation's like meaning. I don't know, I'm 22 and then people...
Let's call it like millennials.
The millennials, I think that's like our thing. Like
it is.
Like a lot of us grew up with Star Wars, but we didn't... Star Wars was something older we grew up with.
The phenomenon of Star Wars was before us, but the phenomenon of Harry Potter was very relevant.
Like, that's our generation's story, you know? That's our thing. Like, and they're pretty decent fucking books.
They are. Can I say my first observation? Two words into this, I was like, her main character is named Barry. And maybe it's just a coincidence. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that they rhyme, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm glad to see, like, her characters and the town name are, like, fairly normal sounding. I thought it was going to be, like, Barry Witherfuckin'-Stunken, like...
Witherfuckin'-Stunken.
Witherfunken. That's like, actually...
That's what she wanted to call Harry Potter, was Barry
Witherfuckin'-Stunken. Barry Witherfuckin'-Stunken.
But, her editors did not go for that. Little known fact.
So, I saw that in the Lifetime movie about Harry Potter.
Oh,
about J.K. Rowling, yeah.
We should talk about that, too.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that, but first, this book.
Alright, so, right, what other observations did you have?
They're making a big deal out of being like, this is an adult novel. Right. So the thing is, I have never heard the term adult novel used for anything other than, like, smutty romance novels.
Or, to be fair, when Stephenie Meyer wrote The Host, which is going to be a movie, aren't we excited? They were big on pointing out that it was not... for her Twilight fans.
But wasn't it still sort of?
It was totally. I mean...
Like, that one was still, like, a teenager. A book for teen... Maybe slightly older teenagers.
And I think... But... The thing is, Twilight was never only a book for teenagers. Because...
Because so many moms got into it.
Oh, God. Right. Well, and Harry Potter also sort of precipitated the trend of children's and young adult fiction being acceptable reading for adults.
Yeah.
But clearly, Little Brown doesn't want it to be a two-way street, which is fine, I guess, because maybe this book has, like,
sex in it or something. It just sounds so awkward when they're like, this is an adult book, even though it'll probably be like this, like, there's probably nothing about it that's going to be, like, especially adult. It's just a book that, like, grown-ups would read.
Barry Fairweather doesn't really sound like a stud kind of name.
Wait, Barry Fairweather still is sort of a stupid name. I don't know. I'm gonna take that back. That's still kind of fucking stupid.
Barry Fairweather and Erotic Life.
Sometimes I do have to say the names always annoyed me in Harry Potter. I'm always like, because the first few books were bordering on being just like comedy.
No,
and then,
it was like Roald Dolly. It was charming.
I guess it was
like
charming.
Florian Fortescue ran the ice cream parlor. I don't know. It was cute. It was cute.
I guess it's cute, but like, come on, like.
All right. The question is. Did the Lifetime movie... I really want to talk about the Lifetime movie. I haven't actually seen it.
Oh, you haven't watched it?
Not yet.
Oh, it's great.
So I'll just have to ask you questions. Did it only paint her as someone was going to write about wizards for the rest of her life? Or did it also anticipate the casual vacancy?
No, it did not anticipate the casual vacancy. Because every single fucking thing that happened in that movie was a reference to Harry Potter. Like,
that's awesome.
She's on a train and a lady comes out. She's like, anything from the cart? Like, it's just like... It's like, you don't need to say that, like, maybe that is how she got the inspiration, but, like, it was, like, This one would have you think anything anyone said to her was like...
Yeah, if you watch this movie, it sounds like the implication is that J.K. Rowling is not at all creative.
At one point, she says to her little ginger friend when she's younger, like, don't be so Weasley. Like, everything is just like, wonk, wonk, like...
Yeah.
Nod to the readers. Like,
I mean, in its defense, Lifetime movies are known for their subtlety.
But when she says, don't be so Weasley, I don't know, the best is like when she goes to Spain and then just like gets knocked up.
What?
Like... Or I don't know if she gets knocked up, but this dude's just so shady. She's like a party woot girl.
Really?
That goes to like Barcelona and like gets knocked up.
Whoa,
like, by
wait.
Like this...
Whoa, whoa. I thought she was married to an anesthesiologist.
No, like that was like her first husband. Remember she was like divorced and like on welfare
right.
when
she
wrote
poor.
Harry Potter. Yeah.
I did go to the cafe where she wrote in Edinburgh.
That's pretty cool.
Edinburgh. It was kind of boring. It was closed. I just sort of looked in and it just looked like any cafe.
I mean, it's pretty amazing though. That's like seeing where they wrote the Bible.
Which is not a single place because, spoiler alert, the Bible was not written at one time by one person.
It was not.
No.
It wasn't?
It was compiled.
I was going to try to say it wasn't, but then I said it was not.
Well, right. Because you knew, in fact.
I knew and my knowingness couldn't be hidden.
Couldn't be hidden.
But no, the Lifetime movie is just so hilarious.
Lifetime movie also probably not written by one person. But the casual vacancy...
And it was based on an unauthorized biography, I will say.
Here's a question. What determines whether or not a biography is authorized or not? Like, how does it work? Do you talk
to
the person?
Authorizes you. Like, well, I think it's pretty fucking simple.
I get that.
Way to ask a great question on the podcast. How is a biography authorized? The person, the subject authorizes it.
I never said I was a role model or an actual journalist. I'm just asking the questions the people want to know. But seriously, like, if you want to write a biography of J.K. Rowling, do you go to her first and be like, I want to write your entire life story? Or do you just write it and then when she doesn't want you
I'm sure you don't call Miss Rowling directly.
Ms.
Rowling.
She's married now to the anesthesiologist.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he makes her...
I suppose this guy...
Feel good.
Wait, I cut you off before you finished the story about Spain. So she just is in Barcelona partying and that's...
Yeah, and I forget if she gets knocked up there or later, but this guy's like the biggest jerk. And it makes you like, you're like, JK, really this guy?
Wait.
Like, he's pulling all the lamest moves. He's just like being a mysterious Spanish man, like, you're so beautiful. Like,
so it's like Eat, Pray, Love, but with Harry Potter as the end result.
Yeah, it's just like if this is what it took for her to like be depressed and write Harry Potter, I'll take it. But like, JK, really, this guy?
Wait, first of all,
he's so fucking cheesy.
Was she depressed when she wrote it? Second of all, do they call her JK throughout the entire movie? Because
I think
that's
they
ridiculous.
Call her like Joanne.
Well, because that's
her
name.
Yeah, but then like, there's the scene where like the manuscript like keeps getting rejected. Then like one intern reads it by accident, and she goes to her boss. She's like, "You have to read this." Like.
I have worked like, in literary offices, and that is not how it works. The interns do not.
I thought literary offices work the exact way where the interns discover the next great American novel every time.
I never discovered
that. And the boss is always mean and grumpy and doesn't believe it, but then he comes around. He's like, there's no money in children's books. But then,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, there was money in children's books.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you listeners are aware of this, but J.K. Rowling is very...
Blair's also a children's book kind of person.
I like children's books.
Or young adults, that's not the
I really like young adult fiction. I think, especially now, we're just seeing a flowering, if you will, of really well-written, interesting stories for people who happen to be teenagers.
So when you were growing up, like, what shit did you like aside from Harry Potter, which everybody... I remember in fourth grade, I tried to be too cool for Harry Potter
for
a while.
Yeah, I was a late comer.
Even though I really, I fucking, like, devour the first three books, then I was like... No, they're kind of stupid.
I didn't
like,
actually
I
read it for the
like
first
that.
Time until fourth grade because the same thing, I didn't want to be trendy. So what
well,
did
I
read?
I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think like, I hadn't read any of them until the first three books were already like released. That's when I remember the hype really started building.
Yeah. Well, it happened once the books started getting released concurrently in America and in the UK. Because for a while you could get the UK editions before the American editions had come out. And that was
I remember
sort of
reading
deal.
About like Nick Magazine?
I did not read about it.
Nickelodeon Magazine, please!
Of course!
Everyone. Remember the commercials?
Yeah, I always asked for it and never got it.
I got it for a little while. It was a pretty fucking good magazine.
I only got Spider, which was okay, I guess.
Spider.
Yeah.
Remember in fourth grade where they'd have Time for Kids or like third grade?
Oh, I had Time for Kids in sixth grade. We were so behind.
Oh, we were reading like The New Yorker.
Oh, well.
That was 11th grade.
I read the cartoons. I did not really start reading New Yorker articles until, like, a year ago.
I never read New Yorker articles, but I pretend I read them.
I mean, you can just read the abstract online when you don't have full subscription access.
That's what I do, and you can sound really nice at parties. Like, there's a very interesting point made in the New Yorker.
I know,
about
I always
this.
Hate that, because I'm like, did you guys read that article in the New Yorker? And you sound like a douchebag, but I mean, sometimes they are good. They should write one about J.K. Rowling. And
I'm
her
sure there's articles about J.K. Rowling in the New Yorker.
I would be interested to go back and look at, like, the advent of the Harry Potter phenomenon and what people were saying.
What it was like,
like,
yeah.
Did it have early detractors? Do they feel like idiots now? I mean, I'm sure all the people who passed on the manuscript...
Harold Bloom fucking hated Harry Potter.
Harold Bloom hates everything.
No, he doesn't. He likes the Bible.
Yeah, women didn't write the Bible.
Wait, do you not know one of Harold Bloom's most famous works?
No.
Well... You sound so fucking stupid right now.
Damn.
One of his most famous books is called The Gospel of Something, and it's about how, I think the Gospel of, I forget, but it's about how one of the sources for the Old Testament, how he believed it was written by a woman and was brilliant, and he was like the lone voice who believes this. So you're calling out a scholar who specifically thought a significant portion of the Bible was written by a woman and saying he hates women. Nice job.
Wow.
Way to call out Professor Bloom.
Well, you know what?
Anyway, I respect Mr. Bloom, but I think he's wrong on
I have
his
not,
Harry Potter
okay,
shit.
I have one book by Harold Bloom. My dad gave it to me for Christmas when I was like 16, and I didn't really read it because I didn't understand
I haven't read
it.
Any books by Harold Bloom.
Has anyone read any books by Harold Bloom?
I know him by Wikipedia.
That's close enough.
Because like he's always on there like on the like author's Wikipedia page, like, and Harold Bloom said...
Well, he doesn't write the Wikipedia pages.
Harold Bloom is right. What if Harold Bloom was writing a Wikipedia pages?
What if, like...
People don't realize that Harold Bloom controls 99% of literary Wikipedia pages.
Yeah, like on the internet, no one knows...
Wake up, sheeple.
...that it's Harold Bloom.
Harold Bloom.
I bet he just goes on, like, Reddit all the time and posts in, like, our atheism. Just a troll.
I'm Harold Bloom.
People are like, no, you're not.
Why have we created this persona for Harold Bloom that, like, goes on the internet, like, I know nothing about Harold Bloom.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I literally know nothing. I just revealed.
You revealed. I at least knew one more thing about
Harold
Bloom.
You at least are familiar with his work. But personality-wise, maybe he doesn't use the internet. He could be one of those guys who writes all his correspondence longhand, and then his secretary types it into an email for him. Not that people... Well, at this point...
I hope fucking Harold Bloom's not lesbian.
What? Oh, Harold Bloom doesn't even... Well,
Harold Bloom would probably despise this podcast.
Yeah, he'd probably...
Or he'd love it.
I don't know. It's... Where does it fit within his scholarship? Like, what is it?
Folks, you're not going to get many podcasts that talk about Celebrity Apprentice and Harold Bloom's views on who wrote the gospel.
Yeah.
That's why you got to keep listening to Pathetic.
Exactly. We're trying to teach you and make Harold Bloom angry at the same time. And talk about J.K. Rowling. Sort of. I don't know. I don't want to say the point is, I'm too fond of that phrase. I guess we were just going to sort of react to her new book. And I'll read it, I guess.
Oh, I'm definitely going to read it. Unless it gets shitty early reviews, then I probably won't read it.
No, I'll still read it, even if it is shitty. The thing is, I'd probably be more likely to read it if it got shitty reviews, because I want to see how badly she's fucking up. But I don't think she will.
But, like, she's too clever for that, I think.
Yeah. The only problem I had with her later books is I think her editor was not being judicious enough.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because the books were too long and that epilogue was stupid.
The epilogue to Deathly Hallows, do we want to talk about that real
Let's talk about it real quickly. That was fan service gone wrong.
Yeah, that was like, that felt like a fanfic, like, that was just...
It was.
And I was dreading when I was watching the last movie, I was like, I hope they don't do that
and
scene.
And
then they did, and I was like...
You just wanted to stab the movie screen in the face.
And, you know, I gotta say, the last book was one of my least favorites. I still liked it. I devoured it in, like, a day.
Oh, I read it literally in 24 hours and kind of lost my mind.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I read it in less than 24 hours, I guess, because those books are long, but they read really quickly.
I also just stayed up all night and read it, and then I cried at the end because I think I was so tired. Like, I was emotionally moved, but...
Also, you're like, I'm not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
My innocence is
I actually had that
it
feeling.
It has crumbled up and
because
died.
That book came out when we were, like, 17 and a half, so...
We were probably going into our senior year of high school.
Yeah, so
or
childhood was pretty much over, and then you have this moment when the book is done, and that's sort of your watershed.
That was pretty cool growing up with, like...
It was cool.
Growing up with the characters a little bit was
It was really cool. And now it's over. And we're all grown-ups. And we're
bitter
gonna...
And
we're writing mystery novels instead of magical ones.
Do you believe in magic? In a young girl's heart? How the music can free her whenever it starts, and it's magic.
biblical entertainment. Is that a good way to phrase it?
I think biblical entertainment's a great way of putting it.
Okay, so Eli is an actual, like, Old Testament scholar.
Not like Old, more New Testament, really.
Biblical. Let's say biblical.
Biblical scholar. I mean, as much as an undergrad is, like, I clearly don't
know. He knows a lot.
But I don't know, I don't have, like, a PhD level, or will I ever have a grad student level of knowledge about ancient Israel and biblical literature. But, like, for an undergrad, I'd say I'm pretty well-versed,
Yeah, so he enjoys reading the actual texts and studying them in an academic context, but also, this past winter break, was lucky enough to go to, is it called the Holy Land Experience?
The Holy Land Experience.
In
Orlando, Florida. So my mom, great as she is, took me to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which was the main reason. We've also got family in Orlando. But the main thing I wanted to see was, of course, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
And the most southern Wawa in the United States.
The most southern Wawa, for all you northeastern listeners.
Woo.
And I remembered that there is a biblical, like, theme park down there, but I'd forgotten about it until we drove by, and it was like, this exit, Holy Land Experience. And I was like, Mom,
we have to exit.
We have to go to the Holy Land Experience. And we didn't go that day, but we went a few days later, because basically what this place is a recreation of Second Temple era Israel, you know, like during the times of JC.
And that's Jesus Christ.
There are reenactments, all culminating in the crucifixion, which
all
was...
All of them? Like, every reenactment is just part of
the
pattern.
A lot of them continue throughout the day, so it's like, you can go see the Last Supper every 15, 20 minutes or something, like, the Last Supper.
No, so wait, does that mean that there's multiple actors playing Jesus?
No, there's still one Jesus.
So he's just really busy.
Yeah, he's doing one show for a while, then he does the big...
Okay.
The big crucifixion
so,
show.
So, like, the morning will be, like, every 20 minutes is the Last Supper.
The Last Supper. Then there's, like, a lunch break. You can tell easily what the lunch break is, because it's, like,
Last
Supper between noon and 1 o'clock.
No, why does Jesus need to take a lunch break from the Last Supper? Didn't he eat enough bread and wine?
He's
gonna go have, like, some
your thimble
dough.
Of juicy juice and a little piece of matzah cracker from the store probably aren't filling them up.
Yeah, probably doesn't tie
I still have my thimble that held my juicy juice. Like, they hand you juicy juice and a little piece of matzah when you walk in so that you can, you know, break bread with the man himself.
Well, that is, I mean, if you want to go into, like, the transfiguration, then...
It was pretty incredible.
I'm sure. Well, okay, and so then they get
I'm, like, not really religious. Also, to point this out, I'm not...
Neither of us is, like, super faithful. I think we're more interested in, like, Christian myth.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just really interested in early Christianity.
Which...
a nerd about it.
This plays into... This is... part of the this is
well,
how the public interacts with
well like
this
I
myth.
Always say so like my major I study stories and like how people tell mm-hmm. stories so I like early Christianity because it's basically this tiny little group of people that were persecuted for a while. Eventually their story became the dominant one in Western civilization and they like took over the world, which is really cool to think about.
If you think about the movie The Greatest Story Ever Told, is that what it's called?
I don't know.
The movie about Jesus. I think it's called The Greatest Story Ever Told.
I think you're thinking of The Last Temptation of Christ.
I think I'm thinking of The Life of Brian. Just kidding. I'm pretty sure it's called The Greatest Story Ever Told. And it is The Greatest Story Ever Told. If you think of it, I mean, if you believe in Jesus, then it's The Greatest Story Ever Told because that's the only story you're supposed to care about ever. But it's also just, like, the greatest story ever told because it,
it's
like...
a pretty fucking popular story.
Yeah, it, like, took over the world. The story about this, like, unknown criminal who had a bunch of crazy followers.
But anyway, back to the funny stuff rather than us waxing poetic about this
stuff.
Right,
we're not going to get
too...
What
a boring way to start off a podcast.
I know. Well,
but anyway, it all leads up to the crucifixion, which is awesome because you've got kids sitting under... like, parents' shoulders, watching this dude get whipped and crucified.
Weird.
And people are eating cracker jacks and popcorn during this. Or giant turkey legs, which is... so you're just... and no one's really getting emotional.
No, wait.
Everyone's just sort of like, this is pretty crazy. It's pretty violent.
So do you think...
I'm really beating
the
shit out of him.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that you were there fairly ironically.
Ironically, but I also probably had a better knowledge source than a lot of people
Were the other people there to, like... worship? I mean,
not really. I mean, you get this, you know, and you know, you've got me, the world's biggest defender of religion.
Despite being an atheist, sort of.
Yeah, I'm sort of like the Christian-loving atheist.
There aren't many.
But not really atheist, but whatever.
You're at this theme park, and then there's just a bunch of people in, like, American flag shirts.
But not even that. They weren't even that white trashy. They just, like, very nice people. I talked to many of them in line. who weren't being devout or anything. They're just like, oh, this is pretty, like...
So what would you talk about?
You know, just like, how you're doing, like, just small talk even, like, it was just...
Crazy.
It was, you know, I went and I was like, this could go, I could end up really ripping on this place for being too preachy and, like, annoying.
And
not that
it?
I, not that I'm really gonna blame a biblical theme park for being preachy, because, I mean, okay, like...
Yeah, what do you expect?
I'm not gonna be in there, like, don't preach to me! But, like...
Yeah, I came here to ride the roller... Were there roller coasters?
There's not rides, there's just reenactments, mostly.
So it's basically just, like, a big interactive theater thing. It's not really,
sort
like
of, yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's a theme park, and the theme is there's no rides.
And they have little plays and stuff that repeat.
Oh, that's... It's kind of like a Renaissance fair, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a Renaissance fair, and they all have to say, like, shalom, shalom! Like, that's their big thing.
That's really weird.
It's great.
I thought Jesus spoke Aramaic.
Well, I mean, he probably would have.
But they didn't at the Holy Land Experience.
Well, they didn't speak. They spoke English at the Holy Land.
Oh, okay.
If they spoke Aramaic, that would be truly amazing.
All right, so wait. Here are the other things I was curious about. What kind of concessions do they have? You said Cracker Jack, turkey legs. Were there turkeys in the Holy Land? Are there? I don't... Well, all right, whatever.
I don't know. I
what
don't
else?
Think
do they
so.
Have, like, do
I can't
they have,
picture it.
Like, biblical-themed food? Like, do they have...
Well, I bought a... At the coffee shop there, I bought a Bible bar.
Nice. What's
and
that?
And I think it's... It's got, like, all the foods mentioned in, like, Deuteronomy 7:7 or something.
Oh, crazy.
It's got, like, figs and some other shit. Like,
man.
It's like Bible bar. I still have it upstairs. You know, I'm never
oh,
going
nice.
To eat it. I'm going to keep my Bible bar forever.
If we find it, we're gonna tweet a picture of it. Cause you need
we'll
to
tweet
that.
A picture of the Bible bar.
And what do they have at the gift shop?
The gift shop? Now, this is going to interest none of you.
It'll interest me.
It was very interesting to see they sold many Bibles.
Really?
And it was interesting to see what translations they sold.
And what translations did they sell?
Like King James,
okay,
NIV.
All right.
They didn't sell the...
Did they sell the really hippie one where everything says your and it's like, instead of thy?
No.
I hate
probably
that.
Probably not. But, well, almost none of the new translations will say thy because they cleaned it up a lot.
Yeah.
They don't sell the New Revised Standard Version though, which is sort of the most accurate in terms of language.
You know what's the best? Or I don't know if you've ever seen this. Do you hang out in the Bible section of Borders? Well, Borders doesn't exist. I used to sometimes when I was like a kid and
just
hung
out
at Borders. And they had like all the Bible is the same no matter what, pretty much. I mean, the text is not inventive, but they had like all these different covers. So they had one that looked like a teen magazine and it was like, take a quiz to see if your faith is pure or something. And then they had
how pure are you
the extreme teen study Bible that had like a guy skateboarding on it and like I guess he was Jesus. And then there was like
cool Jesus
there
on
was
the skateboard,
the scrapbooker's Bible that came with like stickers and shit you could stick on things. So I don't know, I guess Bibles are, you need to collect them all like they're Pokemon or something.
Gotta catch them all.
Well, so that was what Eli did.
It was awesome.
His winter break. I have not... My experience with biblical entertainment... Is that what we're calling this?
We're calling it biblical entertainment.
So my biblical entertainment experience was... I basically went on a week-long road trip with some friends to Kentucky with the express purpose of going to the Creation Museum, which... I think to compare with the Holy Land Experience is a little bit creepier because this one is very polemic. So if you don't know, there's this weird Christian organization called Answers in Genesis, and their whole bent is that the dinosaurs existed with Adam and Eve and the world is 6,000 years old and science is lying. So I went with two incredibly skeptical friends. Me, I went to church as a kid. I don't know where I stand with it. So I was like, maybe I'll keep an open mind. But this place is like actually terrifying. Not only does it have creepy animatronic dinosaurs, but they're like hanging out with Adam and Eve.
It's so amazing.
It's
I wish the Holy Land Experience had that.
Oh,
so
you,
much more authentic.
You
so
should
much
go.
More authentic.
I mean,
I would love to go.
The beginning, they sit you, they get you into a theater and they show you this educational film starring two angels, Mike and Gabe, And they basically...
I like how they clean it up, like...
Oh, yeah.
Hip it up.
Exactly. They were just all white. And it was one of those theaters where, like, the seats would move and stuff when things happened. So, like, you'd be on the arc, and you'd move back and forth, and then they, like, spit water in your face, and you're like, oh, my God. And then they talk about how, basically, you've been lied to, and the world is 6,000 years old. And they talk about, I mean, all... They trot out every creationist argument you've ever heard. Like, you know, the eye could never have existed, and... What about, I don't know, I don't know what creationists argue because I think I blocked it out. I mean, we were just there to sort of basically make fun of it, but not in front of people because we didn't want to die. But you basically walk through and there's a bunch of different exhibits. Some of them are about biblical history and some of them are about dinosaurs. They're big on dinosaurs. Like, dinosaurs are their selling point.
It almost seems like they're joking because it's so extreme that their t-shirts are... Oh. Silhouettes of raptors that say, prepare to believe.
I love my t-shirt. And here's the worst part. So we're waiting in line to get in. This was not cheap. I mean, aside from the fact that we had to drive.
Yeah, Holy Land Experience was $35
admission. Yeah, so this place, I think, was like, yeah, it was like $25, $30. So we're like, all right, well, we've driven so far. We're going to shell out. In line, we make conversation with the security guard, who seemed pretty nice. And he asked where we were from. And we said, oh, Chicago, Montreal, we were in college. And he was like, oh, I remember that. It was... tough, you're probably on a budget. So he walks up with us to the ticket window and he said, give these guys my employee discount. And so we got in for like a song. And then I felt terrible. I was like, I have literally just exploited Christian charity to make fun of Christian charity.
It really did feel that way at the Holy Land Experience a little bit too. It's like I'll laugh silently when I need to laugh. Yeah. Like, I don't want it. All these people are being extremely nice and they haven't said anything like...
Yeah, like, no one was unfriendly. The people there were another story. Like, the employees were fine. I mean, I guess they were just, I don't know.
They're just working for a paycheck.
They're just working for a paycheck. You know? But, like, the people at the Creation Museum, you said everyone at the Holy Land Experience was, like, nice and friendly. Mm-hmm. Creation Museum was definitely, I mean, I don't want to draw generalizations about Kentucky, but, like, American flag shirts everywhere. And not, I mean, these people were taking it all at face value. And they weren't talking about Jesus so much. You know, it wasn't about Jesus. It was about dinosaurs.
Yeah, see, like, that's just, like, absurd. Like, the thing that I appreciated, I guess if I can say appreciated, about the Holy Land Experience was that, like, I was waiting for them to say something, like, homophobic or, like,
yeah.
sexist or this or that to, like, pull out something that uh-huh. I could just be like, oh, man, they're going that
these
route.
Guys.
But it was all very... light based on like the very broad story elements, like Jesus crucified, like,
yeah, like no one
disagrees the tabernacle with that. Of Moses, like the wilderness like it was very like
all stuff that people, if you're a Christian, believe in pretty basic.
It was more Veggie Tales than polemic, like, yeah. It was more like a family friendly environment.
Maybe,
you know?
That's a good segue into the other part of biblical entertainment is Veggie Tales.
Veggie Tales
is pretty great.
Which, all right, Veggie Tales is, I want to know what kind of person wrote VeggieTales.
Yeah.
Because it's...
The writing is funny.
It's virtually Family Guy for kids in the way
it
operates
is.
Sometimes, but with Bible stories.
It's like, it's got that, like, meta humor of, I don't know, Shrek or something.
Yeah, it's very pop culture reference heavy.
But it's about the Bible.
It's about the Bible. But then eventually they started making episodes for TV that were just parodies of, like, classic literature or something.
Which...
just because the writing was so good, and I think ABC or something was like, all right, we can air this on Saturday mornings, but like,
right. We
need to remove all that Christ God stuff.
I just remember learning the story of David and Bathsheba via VeggieTales, which is really awkward because I don't know how many of you have read the Bible story of David and Bathsheba, but the basic story is David's out on his porch, King David of the Psalms, and he sees this girl taking a bath on her porch.
King David of the Psalms. He's a pretty fucking famous king.
Well, I just...
You may know him from the Psalms. You all exactly. Also may know him as the first king of the kingdom of Israel.
All right, okay.
Who made a covenant with God himself.
Well, a lot of people
make
covenants.
Protect his line.
Well,
okay.
Wait, so this is the best part. This is a good part to talk about different translations of the Bible, because it says, Bathsheba's taking a bath to purify herself from her uncleanliness, which it's like, well, why else do you take a bath? But the implication is actually that she, like, has her period and she's, like, taking a shower.
Nice.
Which is gross, right?
Nice.
It's a little weird to be in the Bible. And the different translations, some of them literally say after her period. Some of them are very sort of roundabout. VeggieTales, they don't even go into this. Bathsheba gets replaced by a duck. a plastic duck. So King David is played by, I think...
We can't do this period shit, put a duck there.
No, she literally just becomes an object. So King David is played by Larry the Cucumber, goes nice. Outside, he sees Junior Asparagus taking a bath with his ducky, and he's like, I want that ducky. And so he makes his royal soldiers go get it, and he takes a bath with it, and then he's really upset, or Junior Asparagus is really upset that his ducky got taken. So Larry sends him into battle in the Great Pie War, because no one can die, and he gets pied in the face. And then...
That's brilliant.
And then basically, who shows up and educates David and tells him the parable about the poor man? It's like a prophet or something.
Isaiah? I don't know.
Maybe. So probably not Isaiah. He shows up and he's like, you gotta give the duck back. And so then Junior Asparagus gets the duck back, they take a bath together, and everything's fine. Whereas in the biblical story... David sends Bathsheba's husband to the front lines of whatever war they were fighting, and he dies. And David is just a dick.
VeggieTales has rendered this story completely different, and to the point where, like, why even bother adapting this story?
I mean, the point of the story is don't covet your neighbor's stuff, but the way, I don't know, the adaptation was weird. I watched it at Jesus Camp, so that's maybe the kind of people who watch this, the people who send their children to Jesus Camp.
I wouldn't mind. I'd show my kids VeggieTales because it's funny. Remember then, so they had their first movie, which was the story of Jonah and the whale.
Right.
Which Jonah, I'll get nerdy here again.
Go for it.
Jonah is a satire that a lot of people was like sort of placed in the Bible by accident.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean? How is it a satire?
It's making fun of the typical stories of like prophets.
Wow.
And how like absurd they go. So the thing with Jonah is he doesn't want to be a prophet.
Right.
And he's trying to escape being a prophet, but keeps getting caught up in like crazy adventures. Eventually getting swallowed by a whale and
stuff.
But
that's supposed to be a joke.
A lot of scholars would say it's a satire. It's like it doesn't really have a religious value.
That's
but somehow
funny.
It ended up in the Bible.
Yeah, because what is the moral of that story? That if you get
that you can't escape God's call for you is probably the story. The moral would be that he's supposed to be a prophet. He doesn't want to be a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
But like, no matter what, like you can't escape your role.
So what does VeggieTales do with it?
The story, it was just fucking crazy. I don't even know. And then they introduced the pirates who don't do anything. That also they get a spinoff movie.
Reliant K wrote
They did
a song.
The theme song.
Yeah. And, okay, Reliant K is a Christian band, but it's one of those ones where, like, sometimes they just write stupid songs.
They wrote dumb Christian songs and then dumb cutesy songs about, like, being in, like, middle school.
But here's the best band we discovered when listening to... Well, we were listening to, Absolutely parenthesis Story of a Girl, which is that song by
Classic
9 Days.
Classic hit by 9 Days.
Everyone knows that song. But then we discovered there's this group called Apologetics with an X. And they basically are like Weird Al if Weird Al was a band and Christian and not very funny.
But the song names? Brilliant.
The
A-plus.
Song names are pretty great. So
the content, the lyrics, it's not always good. But the song names? Fucking brilliant.
Story of a Girl became Story of a Squirrel.
One of their worst song names, because you're like, what the fuck is this about?
But it's about Noah's Ark.
About a squirrel on Noah's Ark. Shall we look up some more song titles?
I think, okay, I can't remember, what was the one that was Gangster's Paradise?
It was Shepherd's Paradise.
Right, and I think...
And then they can just keep the same first line, because you're like, as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Like, they can... There's a few songs where they're just like, let's see if the first lyric can be biblical, and then we'll just do that.
Right.
They're actually on Spotify.
Stairway to Heaven became Narrow Way to Heaven, which...
like, it's not easy to get into heaven.
I guess it's kind of forced. And then what was the other one?
I'm looking up some more right now.
Bohemian Rhapsody?
Bethlehemian Rhapsody.
Which was basically just, like, the nativity story.
No, it was about David and Goliath.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess he is. All right.
David's
all right.
Also from Bethlehem.
I.
That's why Jesus is from Bethlehem.
I know. Actually, that's an argument for the existence of the historical Jesus.
Yeah, I was going to get into that, but I don't think our podcast listeners care about.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into those stupid academic
things.
As
we did mention, this will be the pop culture podcast that has the most biblical scholarship, or the biblical scholarship podcast that has the most pop culture references.
Either or.
Take your pick.
A parody of Van Halen's Jump called Judge.
As in an imperative verb, or like about like King Solomon?
Unclear.
All right. Ambiguous. I like it.
They have, now this one might annoy me to all hell, but it's a parody of The Way It Is, called The Atheists.
Oh, that's, it's a little topical.
Okay,
for
let's
apologetics.
See.
They were looking at this on Spotify. There's like pages.
Now this one's great. The parody of Stacy's mom, JC's mom.
JC being Jesus Christ.
So good.
About the Virgin Mary.
A parody of In the End by Linkin Park called Corinthians. I can see them trying to fit that in, like Corinthians.
Oh God.
It's good book.
If you.
But then they have stuff. On their albums where, like, they just try to do other parodies. Like, a parody of Blink-182's All the Small Things called All the Stalls Stink. That's right after Corinthians is All the Stalls Stink.
God, if you thought there was nothing worse than Linkin Park, I'm gonna argue that Christian parodies of Linkin Park are in fact worse.
Yeah, that sounds much worse. A parody of The Real Slim Shady called The Real Sin Savior. Like, these are... I just want to listen to all of these and see the lyrics. Like,
I admire their devotion to rhyme scheme, but I wonder, why do they think that listening to these songs is it like...
Smoke on the water, walk on the water, brilliant, so good.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Walk on the water, like, so good.
But
more than a healing, more than a feeling. I could go all day. These
you
are
could,
all good.
You could, but we get bored. What I want to know, if we could interview apologetics, I would want to know who their fan base is. This is what really interests me about all these weird different permutations of biblical entertainment, is who are they
for? Who's
the
audience?
Yeah. Are they trying to convert people by sort of tricking them
with
songs?
Probably not. I doubt it.
Or, like, do people really listen to this? Like, I can see some, like, hip youth pastor being like, hey kids, I got the latest apologetics CD. And,
yeah.
Like, put it on during youth group when everyone's eating pizza and, like... wondering if they can go sneak and make out in the broom closet. That happened at youth group when I went to youth group. I mean, not me, obviously.
You were making out in the broom closet?
No, I was eating pizza.
Nice. I mean,
and listening
I don't know.
To apologetics.
I'd probably choose pizza over the broom closet. It seems kind of cramped in there.
Yeah. Jesus camp and youth group stories for another time. But,
Like the songs they do parodies of, it's like...
It's weird.
Like, a parody of Pour Some Sugar on Me called Learn Some Deuteronomy.
Oh, that's a weird.
Like...
they're really good at
parody
matching.
Of Eye of the Tiger. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but then I see one I like.
Go.
Eye of the Tiger is I Have to Die First.
That's... Ooh. I have to
now,
die
a,
first.
Another great one, a parody of Guns N' Roses, Every Rose Has Its Thorns. Every Crown Has Its Thorns.
Okay, Guns N' Roses did not do... Every Rose Has Its Thorns. If you ever have a chance to make a road trip or a plane trip to the Holy Land Experience or the Creation Museum...
I mean, if you're in Orlando and you're going to, like, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which I highly recommend...
Which is Satan's work.
Grab some butterbeer.
You should redeem yourself by going to the Holy
but
Land Experience.
But the funny thing is, I remember a lot of people that are going to the Holy Land Experience are not in Orlando for that. They're to go to Disney World and Universal Studios / Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And then the Holy Land Experience is probably, like, they're, like...
Yeah.
Bored, don't know what to do day of vacation. A lot of these people.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. If you don't feel like giving $35 to the Trinity Broadcasting Network, I am fine with that. They also give you a free Beanie Baby when you leave.
What?
And it says, a Christmas gift from Jesus. And I was like, Jesus got me a fucking Beanie Baby? Like, Jesus, didn't you know these Beanie Babies are fucking worthless now?
I mean...
You always give me the worst gifts! Salvation! You gave me salvation that one year! And ever since then, you get me fucking Thai Beanie Babies. I've had enough of you. Just because you died for my sins 2,000 years ago, don't think you can just give me Beanie Babies every year after that. Fuck you, man.
In other words, Jesus is your aunt circa 1996 in terms of gift giving.
Except in circa 1996, I'd be like, fuck yeah, Beanie Baby. I'm going to sell this on eBay for a profit.
And at a time, I'm sure
you... The other day, I actually went on eBay and looked to see... Remember there was the Princess Diana Beanie Baby?
Yes.
They're going for like $10 on eBay
I
now.
I think it was there.
They used to be going for like $200 or more.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to buy it just so I can be like, people come over, you know, bring a girl over.
Put it in like a glass bell jar and like...
Would that be a good way to impress a girl, bring her over and be like,
no.
Let me show you my most prized possession. I have a purple bear Beanie Baby princess. You know how fucking rare these things
weird.
Are, dude?
Speaking of
I don't
parody
know why I
songs,
call her dude.
Remember when Elton John... changed the words to Goodbye Norma Jean to make it about Princess Diana?
No.
He did. It was pretty bad. I mean, it was an Elton John song.
Good old lady die. Shout out.
I know. She's up there with JC right now, playing with Beanie Babies.
What a shitty Christmas gift.
This is the story of a squirrel who got miserable when he drowned the whole world. While things looked so dark and Noah's Ark was absolutely flooded, yet she's fine. were they there? A float in the boat, it was over 1 year. How come the world didn't prepare? Meteorologists said it would clear. How did they stand that rain in? Where was the hope and the souls of the crew? Life on the waves is...
This is what we want to be a semi-regular feature.
This is going
to
be hopefully every episode from here on out. Well, not everyone, but...
But occasionally.
Pretty regularly.
We're going to read the best Illuminati-related tweets of the week.
Should we talk about Illuminati tweets?
It's a phenomenon. A lot of people seem to think the Illuminati are involved with everything.
Every single thing that ever happened in the world.
Pretty much. If you ever are bored on Twitter, just look up...
If you're not some person that knows stupid conspiracy theories, the Illuminati control the world, and they have since, like, the 1700s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Starting the New World Order and shit. I don't know. A lot of it's not very consistent. A lot of it, for some reason, is...
A conspiracy theory that doesn't pan out? Surely
a lot of
just...
it now is about, like, hip-hop artists being... Part, like, everyone thinks Kanye was part of the Illuminati.
Yeah, didn't
and everyone thinks Jay-Z is part of the Illuminati.
Well, right. So, okay.
We'll get to that.
Here's a great one. At TheRealPrince91 tweets, Jay-Z and Beyonce's daughter is named Blue Ivy. Blue Ivy, spelled backwards, is Ulb Uvi, means Lucifer's daughter in Latin. Hashtag Illuminati.
You know Latin. Does that at all resemble
Lucifer's daughter? No, that does not literally mean anything.
So, like, people are just obsessed with...
The thing is, Lucifer in Latin... is Lucifer. So, I don't know why they would think it's there. The Real Prince 91.
For some reason, Blue Ivy, Jay-Z and Beyonce's daughter, is a big subject of Illuminati tweeters. They believe that Whitney Houston was sacrificed
to make
room for Blue Ivy. It was an Illuminati sacrifice.
Whitney Houston died so that Blue Ivy might live.
Inspirational. You can basically, if you go into Twitter, I'll just preface it like this. Type in anything and Illuminati in the search box, and you'll find someone being like, yo, Richard Simmons is in the hashtag Illuminati.
But sometimes it's completely...
Shaking my damn head. They always say SMDH for shaking my damn head.
Which stands for shaking my damn head. We had to look this up because we didn't know. This one is completely unrelated. B_Siler writes, riding around, I'm getting it. It's mine, I spend it. Hashtag Illuminati.
Nice. I kind of get that.
What does that have to do with the Illuminati?
I don't know what it has
Nothing.
To do with the Illuminati.
How are the Illuminati involved in those actions? They're not. All right. At Bang Out Promo writes, do we need to say at? I'm going to do it.
No, most people say at. It's fun to do.
At Bang Out Promo writes, I'm watching this movie about the hashtag Illuminati called hashtag The Cabin in the Woods.
Wait, The Cabin in the Woods is an Illuminati movie?
Apparently.
I don't know, because I'm really excited to see that movie, and I didn't know it was about the hashtag Illuminati.
What's it about?
I don't know.
Besides the Illuminati.
A Cabin in the Woods.
But you were talking about it
the
other
day. It's like a deconstructionist like horror movie.
Ooh.
But like I heard like don't read any reviews because it will inadvertently spoil it. Maybe that just spoiled it for me.
Maybe the spoiler is that the Illuminati
The Illuminati involved. Owns all cabins in all woods. Illuminati owns the woods.
It would make a lot of sense. They own everything. All right. This is a tweet from at BeMoreNaddy, but her display name is Blonde Pubes, and then like a little hand given a peace sign, which I guess you can do
nice
with
name,
some
dude.
Keyboard tricks. Yep. She tweets, I think it was a girl, Instagram was getting 2 TO much money and sold its soul to Android first now FB. Hashtag Illuminati.
So Facebook's the Illuminati. And Instagram was like
and the
sold
Android,
out to the Illuminati.
The Android software
is also Illuminati because it probably has to do with Google and Google sort
of
Illuminati.
Mm-hmm. The only safe OS for your mobile device is iOS if you want to avoid the Illuminati.
No, Steve Jobs is also in the Illuminati. Wake up, sheeple.
Damn it. So what are we supposed to do?
I don't know.
If
someone thinks he is in the Illuminati.
Well, if someone says it on Twitter, it's obviously true.
Oh, yeah. That's the rule I live by.
We have a lot of contradicting opinions. All right. At Mr_L32 says, hashtag, it's time for you to realize Kobe is wit the Illuminati, hashtag. That's why he's so raw.
I think Kobe practiced to get good at basketball.
Yeah, I think he's just actually a talented basketball player. I don't think there's any supernatural foul play.
No, I don't like basketball, but I like Kobe.
I do. He's, well...
Except for, like, cheating on his wife and sexing around everywhere.
Yeah, that was a little awkward. But that has nothing to do with the Illuminati. Those are his basketball playing, his character flaws, all just part of him as a human being. The human drama of Kobe Bryant.
I don't think it's hashtag Illuminati.
All right. At Isaac_McCabe writes, had no idea so many hip-hop/rap/pop worship the devil to get famous. Hashtag Illuminati. Hashtag tsk tsk.
Tisk, Tisk is right.
Yeah, I just want to know what Feymouse is. Is it a kind of mouse?
I believe so.
Or is it...
Well, mice sold out to the Illuminati long ago. The Illuminati send them into apartments.
Have you seen, though, Mickey Mouse, the way his head is shaped? Kind of like a triangle?
It's kind of like a triangle, an upside-down triangle.
Yeah, like which, the Illuminati.
Like Tinky Winky. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people, like Jerry Falwell, said upside-down triangle means that Tinky Winky was gay. Also because he was purple and carried a purse, which I think was
more
far
damning.
More indicative of Tinky Winky's sexuality. Well, also, but I think Tinky Winky's distinct lack of any genitalia.
Yeah, that's sort of
was...
like Teletubbies don't have gender, so how can they be anything?
How do Teletubbies do it?
I don't know.
No, let's get into this real quick.
Well, maybe
like
they
now
lay...
I'm thinking about it.
Maybe
and
they
now
lay
I don't
eggs.
Know.
Maybe they reproduce asexually.
But they don't have butts. They don't have like a butthole.
Well, you don't lay eggs out of a butthole, Eli.
They don't lay eggs out of their... They don't have... What would they lay eggs out of,
well,
though?
Well, there are other orifices that you lay eggs out of, is my point.
Well, yeah, but, like, they don't have, you know, those other orifices either.
We don't know. How closely have you ever looked?
I mean, all right, so wait. I guess the question is, the way we see the Teletubbies, is that, like, a uniform they put on? Is that, like, a jumpsuit?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that what they look like? I think
maybe,
that's what they look like.
You know what? Maybe the Teletubbies are not involved with the Illuminati, but they're actually reptilians.
They're probably reptilians.
That would make a lot
is,
more all right, sense.
Wait. Okay. I want to get into this. I'm still on the Teletubby sex.
I'm more into Teletubbies as reptilians. If they were reptilians, they'd probably lay eggs.
Are the things they're wearing jumpsuits, or is that just them?
Well, literally, those are jumpsuits. There's a human being inside those.
No, but their face is also... The whole thing's one big costume.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like you think the Teletubbies are actual real things that live somewhere.
So, alright, here's my theory on the Teletubbies.
Okay.
Now that I think about it.
Now
that show was a fucking tragedy.
Was it?
It's about the last four members of a race that can't reproduce.
Wow.
You had Tinky Winky,
mm-hmm.
Dipsy, Lala, Po.
Mm-hmm.
Teletubbies.
Yes, no, I'm aware.
So, they don't have any reproductive organs.
Yeah.
They're dying out.
They're the last of the Teletubbies.
And if you ever watch that show, that's sort of like a post-apocalyptic, like, empty world where there's, like, a vacuum that
it
talks.
Is.
And a sun that's a baby.
Wait,
but there's,
wait,
like,
wait
nothing
minute.
Else.
Have we actually discovered a conspiracy involving the Teletubbies? Could the Illuminati be involved, do you think?
Probably.
I don't want to rule this out. I mean, they could also be reptilians.
I mean, but, like... I like this idea of the Teletubbies as a tragedy about, like, four beings that are the last of their kind just trying to live out
maybe
their days.
Maybe it's what happens after the bomb drops. Maybe those are what mutant
humans
will look
the
like.
The mutant is, like, TVs get infused into
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah. And
then some baby gets infused with the sun and just goes like, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. And he's just the one watching over the Teletubbies. And then someone gets infused, like their brain gets infused with a vacuum cleaner, that vacuum cleaner.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
That does stuff.
Oh, man. This is all freaking me out, actually. Are you looking up
Teletubbies
Illuminati?
Well, there's only one tweet about Teletubbies being in the Illuminati, which is still far more so. This is like a reply. First
what
one
does
said,
it say?
First someone tweeted to someone,
mm-hmm.
Please tell me you're not part of the Illuminati. Then the person responded, I'm not, but those Teletubbies.
Well, I think that's a good way to end this segment, then, is don't trust the Teletubbies because they're in the Illuminati. Well, until next week, don't trust
we'll
the Illuminati.
and
keep your eyes open for any good tweets.
You motherfuckers, how it feels to drop a body. The simple guns of my lifestyle, the Illuminati. Yo, Machiavelli, they can't stop you. Hold it down, yeah, we got you.
Okay, so that pretty much does it for this episode.
Yeah, a lot more serious than the last one.
A little bit more serious.
I hope we still gave you some giggles, some
gigs. Absolutely,
gigs.
Absolutely.
And some chucks, maybe.
We also want to give a shout-out to...
Some guffaws, maybe. Maybe one guffaw.
Stop. Can we just give a shout-out to our unofficial sponsor? They don't know that they're sponsoring us because they didn't
We've
pay
got
us.
A different sponsor every episode,
pretty much. And this one is this burrito place that's... ostensibly near us.
What's
but...
up, burritos? It's organic foods of all kinds. It's
okay.
Organic fast food.
We've never been there. It's called The Lighthouse. That's L-I-T-E house. And they're... Not only do they offer organic food, but they're pretty involved with Evangelical Christianity.
It's Evangelical Christianity Organic Food.
Which seems to be fitting.
The lighthouse is about Jesus or
something. The theme of this episode.
Yeah, so they decided to sponsor us.
Thanks!
We didn't ask them, but I'm expecting to get an organic burrito.
Yeah, we're just going to walk in there and tell them that we gave them a shout out and get some tempeh. So, until next time, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, Pathetic Pod.
Please like us or follow us.
Yeah, we're lonely. And also, pathetic.com, the best website.
The more people follow us, the more stuff we would like tweet. If
maybe.
It's like the same like old people, I'll be like, I don't want to be funny to you.
We
people.
Might be live tweeting some stuff. We've got a really good episode in the works for next week or possibly the week after.
There's something really cool coming up.
Yep.
It's going to be an epic one subject episode that you'll probably learn a lot about pop music.
Yeah.
That you didn't
But we don't want to give too much away.
We don't want to give too much away, but it's going to be
There's
awesome.
There's always good stuff
really
in the works.
I'm really excited about it.
Eli's really excited. So keep listening, circulate the tapes, and we will not see you next week because that's not how the internet works.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You are the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. You called out to our country and you whispered to those in pain. Now you belong to heaven and the stars spell out your name. It seems to me